Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business, and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, everyone. Welcome, welcome. Well, we're going to start today by talking about no more allergies. How good does that sound? And then, as I promised last week, we'll be bringing you the interview that I did with two fabulous filmmakers. They work for National Geographic. They're independent filmmakers, but they've been National Geographic filmmakers in residence for the last 4 years out in Botswana. And they're going to talk about the big cat situation and some of the work they've done with some of the big cats. And then we'll end today's show. We'll switch from surviving the animal kingdom to surviving the shopping mall. We have a very funny author with us who'll end the show today. He talks about retail hell. He's written a really funny book, but he's going to talk about some tips that you should know and some ways you could possibly save money. And that's coming up at the end of the hour. I'm very pleased, first of all, to welcome Dr. Lon Jones to the show. He's described as America's favorite country doctor. He's a 30-year veteran in healthcare and an osteopathic board-certified family physician at the High Plains Hospital and Clinic in Hale Center, Texas. He's an expert in family medicine and is internationally known for his initiatory work in nasal xylitol in the upper airways. He's written a good book called No More Allergies, Asthma or Sinus Infections. Dr. Lon Jones, welcome to the show.
Thanks, and thanks for having me.
Well, this is a subject I think that many people are going to be pricking up their ears to, because it seems like almost everybody has allergies of some kind. And you talk on one of your websites about the fact that we've had antihistamines and decongestants available for the last 25 to 30 years. And during this time, ear infections in the U.S. have tripled and cases of asthma have doubled. And you ask the question, is there a connection? And you say, yes, you think there is. So what do you think the connection is there?
Well, I think the connection immediately, when you introduce it in that with that description, and that's one that I do too, but the immediate description is, or the immediate problem, is that we have been looking at a runny nose and nasal congestion as being the problem. And that's not the case. The problem is that we live in a polluted world, and we always have. There's always bacteria and viruses and toxins that are in the air that we breathe. Even if we're in a pristine environment, it's not as much there. But in our hustle-bustle daily industrial world and chemical world, there's all kinds of them. Mm. And our nose recognizes these toxins, and it says if these toxins don't get washed out, then I'm going to get sick. And so it tries its best to wash them out. And when we sense that, we sense a runny nose and nasal congestion. And so the response to that in the medical profession is to take an antihistamine or a decongestant or both. And what those drugs do is turn off the handicap, that defense, and it is the defense. So if you handicap the defense of your favorite football team, what happens?
Well, it's not going to win.
That's right. And it's the same with us, unfortunately. And so our approach is to look at this defense, and that's really a biological model as opposed to the analytical model that the health profession uses. Mm. You go to the doctor and you tell him your symptoms, and the doctor tries to figure out how he can make your symptoms less bothersome.
Right.
And in the case of a runny nose, that's turning off the runny nose. And it's easy to do. Antihistamines, decongestants.
Yeah. And tell me a little bit about steroids so I understand where they fit in. Because you say they don't, steroids don't block the washing of the nose, but they do turn off the sensing mechanisms. So what exactly do they, because I was once prescribed steroids spray. I didn't take it, but, but doctors do like to prescribe it.
Yeah. Well, in this response, when a person has a runny nose, for example, they go to their doctor, they say, I have a runny nose. Well, try antihistamines and decongestants. Antihistamines and decongestants turn off they close down the blood vessels that the immune system has opened to try and wash out the problem. They turn off the histamine receptors, and histamine is the trigger for the nasal washing. And if those things don't work, you go back to your doctor and say they don't work, and the doctor gives you a steroid.
Mm-hmm.
And a steroid puts the immune system to sleep, so it doesn't care if your nose is polluted.
Right.
And that's not a very good idea. Your immune system is there to keep you healthy.
Right. Well, I was very interested to read about this because I did walk out of the doctor several times with handfuls of sprays and rinses and all kinds and tablets, and I found that I was actually better off not taking them. I did take them, and I got very, very sick because oftentimes they do cause upper respiratory infections,
yeah.
Don't they?
Yeah.
So let's talk about your journey. This book, No More Allergies, Asthma, or Sinus Infections, began with your granddaughter Heather. You say, tell us a little bit about that, if you would.
Well, let me introduce Heather. She was 5 months old when Mom and Dad put her in daycare so Mom could go back to teaching. And she had very few risk factors. Parents didn't smoke, breastfed, still breastfed. Mom pumped and fed her breast milk when she went to daycare. But daycare is a polluted environment. They have lots of little kids there, and it's hard to keep them clean. They go around all day sharing germs. And so she started getting ear infections. And my wife, and got to bring her into this because she's had a critical part. My wife was a special ed teacher 20, 30 years before this all started. And what she saw in her special ed students, and she didn't take care of the really handicapped ones. She took care of the ones that were intelligent but just had language and learning difficulties. And the bottom line with those kids is they all had tubes put in their ears when they were younger. And tubes to prevent ear infections or to drain those infections once they happen. And tubes are probably the commonest treatment for ear infections.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is when you have a young child, and this is particularly critical with young children like Heather was, there's a window, a developmental window for learning sounds and learning other things as well. And probably the best example is the window for vision. If you have a baby who is born blind with cataracts, for example, and you don't operate within that window, and most people are saying operate before 10 weeks, if you don't operate before that window, you risk having perfectly normal eyes after the surgery, but a child who can't see because the brain connections are not there.
Oh, wow.
When a child is born, the brain goes through developmental stages, and there's optimum ones for vision. And if they see things and they can function and their eyes function, they learn to use those brain channels. But if they can't see, if there's cataracts, and that window closes and says, hey, there's nothing here, I don't need to worry about these channels anymore, those channels are shut. Well, the window for learning language starts about 6 months gestation and lasts until about 2 years. And 2 years is usually when they start not having so much problem with ear infections, but they're very common in children younger than age two. And the problem does continue longer than that. So if you have these ear infections, every time a child gets an ear infection, there is some fluid elaborated into the middle ear to try and wash out the infection. And if the infections are recurrent and chronic, that fluid has a tendency to stay there. And it gets thicker as it does, and it gets stickier as it does. The English even have a descriptive term. They call it glue ear. And it is very thick.
Mm-hmm.
And this place where this fluid is the place behind the eardrum where all the little bones are that transmit the vibrating eardrum to the brain. And if there's fluid, sticky fluid in there, that transmission doesn't happen well. And so these kids can't hear clearly. And when they can't hear, they don't use the pathways that go into the brain that help them develop their language. And they wind up in language learning disabled. They have a term for it. It's called POD, P-O-A-D. And if you look up POD on the Internet, you'll find a lot about the problems that these kids have.
So how did you get exposed to xylitol? How did this lead you to working with xylitol?
Well, that was the discovery, because when our granddaughter had her fourth ear infection in as many months, and the doctor started talking about putting tubes in her ears, Jerry, my wife, went ballistic. She couldn't handle it.
Right.
Didn't want that for her granddaughter, and she got me by the short hair and said, essentially, you know, if you really care about kids, is what she said, you'd find a way to fix this problem. Well, that's a challenge. I got to say I care about kids because I'm a doctor. And so I went to work, and I was reading through the literature, and I came across this study that was done in Finland, printed in the British Medical Journal in 1996. And in Finland, they use gum with xylitol. It's spelled X-Y-L-I-T-O-L. And they use it since the 1970s to prevent tooth decay. And the bottom line of 30 years, close to 40 years now, of clinical studies with this gum is that if you chew two sticks five times a day, you prevent 80% of tooth decay. And the study that I read about said that looked at kids chewing this gum for the tooth decay, and they also had a benefit of 42% less ear infections. The authors of that study pointed out that the xylitol works on the bacteria. That's true in your mouth with the ones that cause the tooth decay, and it's true in your nose. And my granddaughter was too young to chew gum. I took that home and we talked about it. And, you know, what do we do? Well, we decided to put it where the bacteria were, and that's in the back of your nose, because that's where ear infections start.
Mm-hmm.
That's where sinus infections start. That's where allergies start. That's where the asthma that allergies are associated with starts. All of this is infectious stuff in the back of your nose, or allergies in the back of your nose. And what xylitol does in the back of your nose is unhook the bacteria, number one, and it washes your nose, number two. So it's like soap for your nose. It's a very neat way, simple way, safe way to wash your nose. And if you wash your nose, problems go away.
Right. And so you use a spray on this. Now, talk a little bit about the difference between, you know, somebody recommended to me to use a neti pot, which I actually found very beneficial. Xylitol, as I understand it, is a sugar, alcohol, and saline. Is that correct?
Xylitol is chemically a sugar alcohol, but it's neither a sugar nor an alcohol.
Okay.
So it's confusing. But it's a sugar-like substance. It looks like sugar. It tastes like sugar. You can use it for sugar in your coffee or tea. In fact, the first study that they did with looking at xylitol and tooth decay was just using it as a sugar substitute.
Okay, so if I were to, you recommend, I mean, you have a product called Clear, X-C-L-E-A-R.
No C.
Oh, excuse me, that's right.
It's just X-L-E-A-R, Clear.
Yeah. And you say that this basically can help heal us naturally of asthma and allergies, because all of the irritants start in the back of the nose. But what's the difference between this product and just a regular saline product that you might use in a neti pot, for example?
The saline that you use in a neti pot, I've used a neti pot, but nasal spray with saline is so much easier to use, and I've used that for the last 20 years, and there's no question that they help a little. In my experience, I probably cut my incidence of sinus infections occupational hazard when you're seeing sick patients all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I probably cut that incidence by maybe 50%, but that's being generous, I think. But put xylitol in with the saline, and it's 100 times better, easily 100 times better.
Right.
And using a neti pot, you know, there's no question that Dr. Oz has made the neti pots famous in America. but a neti pot is essentially saying that my normal nasal washing just isn't up to this. And when you use a neti pot, you're irrigating your nose, you're bypassing your normal nasal defenses. And we think those normal nasal defenses can be helped and made to work optimally if you put xylitol in that mix periodically.
Mm. And you state repeatedly that xylitol does not kill the bacteria, and that's important because...
It is important, because if you kill the bacteria, then you promote, you stimulate those bacteria to develop resistance to your, to what is killing them.
Mm.
And you can see that with antibiotics. Now we have germs that our antibiotics can't kill because we've used antibiotics usually in hospitals, but even big doses. The bacteria that make that resistance are in our GI tracts, everybody's GI tract.
Right, right.
So the more a person takes antibiotics, the more those antibiotics get in their GI tract and interferes with the bacteria there. And those bacteria are the ones that develop resistance, and then it just spreads through the population.
So if somebody's interested in finding out more about this product that you have and using xylitol to treat their allergies, asthma, or sinus infections, where can they get that information, Dr. Jones?
In the book that you're talking about, it's called No More Allergies, Asthma, or Sinus Infections. It's available from the publisher, Freedom Press, in California. If you go to Freedom Press online, and you can order from them. You can get it from Amazon.com. Your local health food store may carry it. It's just recently out, so some of them may not know about it. But most health food stores in the country know about Clear.
Yeah.
In 2004, it was voted best new natural medicine by America's health food stores.
And Clear is spelt with the Finnish X, right?
Yeah.
X-L-E-A-R.
Yeah. When we first were trying to figure out a name for this, I went to a friend of mine who is Finnish, and I said, tell me about xylitol. And he got this quizzical look on his face that he didn't know what I was talking about. So I spelled it out for him, and he said, oh, Kulitol. So they pronounce their X like in Greek and Russian and Finnish, like a soft K.
Yeah, very interesting. I think you've also got a website too, americascountrydoctor.com, correct? That's what it is.
I'm not sure if somebody set that up or not.
Okay, you might not know about that.
You can find a little bit more about it at nasalxylitol.com.
Okay, very good.
That's the oldest website, but I haven't worked on that website since I started writing the books.
Okay, well, the book is called No More Allergies, Asthma, or Sinus Infections, and if you suffer, this is very well worth reading. The revolutionary approach to eliminating upper respiratory problems, including children's middle ear infections. Dr. Lon Jones, thank you so much for being with us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Keep your noses clean.
And on that note, we'll go to break. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org. NorthwestLegal.org.
Do you have legal questions? Need to know where to turn?
Hi, this is Rick Gregrick, your host of Northwest Legal Compass.
Northwest Legal Compass will address your questions on a variety of legal topics, including estate planning, asset protection, real estate and business planning, and more. The legal and accounting staff of Gregrick & Associates are dedicated to providing you with superior legal and tax services. Their integrated counsel is geared to the achievement of your goals.
Visit us on the web at rjglegal.com.
Be sure and tune in every Friday at noon here on Alternative Talk 1150.
Intuitive dream coach Joyce Chapman says there are no little dreams, that every desire is important, and that you deserve life to its fullest. As a dream activist, Joyce has helped thousands of people gain clarity about their lives and make positive changes. She can help you too. See more information at joycechapman.com. And if you have a question for Joyce regarding your dream, email joyce@joycechapman.com.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to help you heal and stay healthy.
1150 KKNW.com, your connection to Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. Well, last week on National Geographic TV was Big Cats Week, and they profiled several, they showed some great films on there, all to do with big cats. And you might remember that I said last week, if you were listening, that big cats, in particular lions and leopards, have reduced in numbers over 95% in the last at 50 years, which is staggering. And in 10 years, if we don't do something today, in 10 years, they will become extinct. I know many of you are serious animal lovers out there, but even if you're not and you just think it's part of the ecology, my guests today say this will really cause damage to the ecology of Africa. I was lucky enough to talk with the two filmmakers. They're award-winning filmmakers and National Geographic explorers in residence, Derek and Beverly Joubert. And 30 years ago, they set out on a quest to get close to big cats. They've been filming, researching, and exploring in Africa for all of that time. And their coverage of unique predator behavior has resulted in 22 films, 10 books, 6 scientific papers, and many articles for the National Geographic magazine. And that work has resulted in 5 Emmys, a Peabody, the World Ecology Award, and the recent induction into the American Academy of Achievement. Beverly Joubert is an acclaimed photographer, and many of her photographs have appeared separately in National Geographic magazine. And for them, filmmaking's always been a way to bring a message of conservation to audiences. Their film Eternal Enemies has been seen by over a billion, not a million, but over a billion viewers. And we're going to bring that conversation to you right now. Beverly Joubert and Derek Joubert. Well, first of all, I want to welcome you both to the show today. Very pleased to be able to talk with you. You've been filming together for 30 years, devoted your lives to filming big cats. I looked at this film and I had to ask the question, did this work choose you or did you choose it?
Hi, Vicky. No, I think that we went out into Africa to discover the wild part of Africa without really knowing that it would end up filming, being about film. So I think in many ways we evolved into it.
That is so true.
You said that you are based in Botswana. That's where you spent most of your time. You said it feels like the end of the world, Derek. How so?
Well, you know, the world is now so full of clutter and noise and opinions and people. It's the one place where you can go and be right at that edge. You know, I think philosophers and poets forever have needed to go to that silent place. And for me, Botswana and the Okavango Delta is that silent place.
Mm-hmm. And Beverly, you say it's extreme living in the middle of a swamp, very poetically put, but you say it is home and it just feels right.
It truly does. I must tell you that when we have to come on these trips, it is very hard to drag ourselves away from that wilderness. And for 28 years, we've lived in wild places. We've explored them. So we have excitement in our veins and adventure. And we're trying to discover what we don't know about these areas and about the cats. So it's the extreme part, though, is that we have many challenges. And the challenges are from the tiniest little amoeba in water to mosquitoes. And then, of course, crossing those major rivers where we really don't have man-made bridges. We only have one that is quite wonky. But after that, it's the unknown. If the buffalo are going one way and the lions are following, we follow behind them. And often we don't know what's underneath our wheel. And at times we have, put the vehicle into a major hole and drowned the vehicle.
I can imagine. You say that in the film that you chose to film the particular lions that you filmed because they were bigger, slightly bigger, but they had two unique characteristics that drew you to them. They hunted a lot in the day, and they hunted mostly buffalo. So I wonder if you'd tell us about that, because it's a little different to how I had thought of lions before.
Well, yes, we'd come out of the northern part of Botswana, Sabuti and Silinda Reserve area, where the lions are generally nocturnal hunters. So 90% of what they hunt up there is at night. And then we flew over this area one day and looked down and went, wow, what's going on down there? We got on the ground sometime later and discovered this whole new almost race of lions that are swamp cats that are moving through the water, which, all cats hate water generally. But because of that constant forging through the water, they've developed these huge chest muscles. And they're about 15% bigger than other cats that we've known. And for some bizarre reason, they're hunting during the day. Now, we can't explain that because lions generally have small hearts, which makes them more efficient when it's cool. But maybe the water's helping. But these cats are hunting during the day. 90% of what they hunt is during the day, and 90% of what they hunt is buffalo. So quite a challenge. A whole lot of circumstances that made it fantastic for us.
Yeah. Now, one of the things you said that in your early days of filming, one of the questions you were interested in, Beverly, was why do hyenas sometimes so easily win the fight over food? And why sometimes do lions win? And there was a very simple answer to that was hidden behind a mane, as you put it.
Yes, that's so true. And that was in the early days where we were doing this extreme nocturnal work, starting at 4 in the afternoon and working right through until 9, and 9 in the morning. And, of course, it took us a couple of years before we actually understood exactly why it was happening. And it really is that territorial male. When the lionesses are feeding and have made a kill on feeding, often a clan of hyenas, and the clan of hyenas in that area would be 20 to 40 strong, would easily be able to take over from 6 lionesses. But as soon as that male came in, he is much bigger. His weight is much bigger. And then, of course, that mane is displaying as he's running in. And they would respect that, and often just him coming in roaring, they would run off. But then, of course, we produced a film called Eternal Enemies, and we talk about this in Big Cat Odyssey as well, in that where the male started hunting down the hyenas whenever he was in the area, and often he would target the matriarchal females.
Yeah, interesting. Because you say, as you point out in the film, we often do think of males as the regal showcases, or as even being lazy because they're lying there while the female gets their food. But their true worth comes out at night then.
As it is with all males, Vicky, just a bit of time.
Derek, one of the things you said in the film was that every piece of the tightly bound fabric of life out there, you see it as just another piece of the big cat puzzle. Talk to us about that a little, if you would.
Well, exactly. If you look at a piece of African bush or forest or savanna, it's very complex, and there are a lot of things going on, but at the very, very core of that is a big cat.
The grasslands of the Masai-Mara are driven by these big cats. The entire migrations across most parts of Africa are driven by the threat of predation. So almost every situation, and definitely every ecosystem we look at, is driven by its big cat. And the real danger is if you take these big cats out of the system, the systems themselves start to collapse, and so they're vitally, vitally important.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the hunting situation out there, because the big cat population, as we know, is drastically dwindling. I think you pointed out in the film that leopards and lions are down by 95%. Where does hunting fit into this now?
Well, safari hunting still plays a major role in that. If you think that they're now, you know, the lion numbers have gone in our lifetimes from 450,000 to about 20,000. But even it's even wrong to focus on that number, because of that 20,000, there may be 3,000 or maybe 4,000 male lions. And as we go out and we target those male lions because they're the biggest and they look glamorous on a wall somewhere, we're slowly knocking down, in fact rapidly knocking down, the genetic strength of those of those species, lions in particular. And about 550 of those 3,000 lions that are left, about 550 of them come into the United States as trophies each year. So clearly this is not sustainable, and it's playing a major role.
Yeah, it's hard for me to imagine why somebody would want a lion's head stuck on their wall, but I know it does happen. But what other threats do they have?
Well, each one of the threats at its most basic description is human conflict, or humans at least. So hunting is taking out a big chunk of the gene pool. A conflict with cattle, around cattle, so lions, certainly in areas of East Africa, going out and hunting cattle because there are now so many cattle in Africa. And then there's a retaliation from herders and villages, tribes. In West Africa, it's slash and burn, basically chopping out the forests and creating less and less habitat for leopards. Man again. And of course, we've got 7 billion people. And every time we add another billion people to the roster, all the big scary predators of the world, from crocodiles and sharks and lions, leopards, tigers, all halve in number. And so while we're increasing, they're decreasing rapidly.
And then, of course, there's still some cultural belief that animal parts are going to be healing. And that's happening both in Africa and in Asia. So a lot of the animals that are poached are used for some medicinal purpose.
Right, right. Now, you talked earlier about the hunters seeking out the stronger animals. So I'm assuming that weakens the gene pool at some point. But you also talked about an interesting story in the film where sister lions were attacking sister lions and eating cubs. And for 6 years, I believe, there were no cubs that survived. What was going on there?
You know, we don't know, Vicky. The thing about that now is that we've lost over 100 cubs in that time. And the females, for some reason, won't let their sisters breed. And it might well be a function of the fact that they're on a small island. And indeed, if we'd added 100 more lions to that system, it would have been overcrowded anyway. But it seems unnatural, and I think that it's possibly an indication of what happens when you put a species under pressure. They behave in a very weird and unpredictable way.
Mm. I have to say, this is one of the most beautifully filmed pieces that I've really seen. I mean, we expect that from National Geographic, sure, but it really it made me see things a little differently. And one of the things that's always hard for me, I'm one of those people who has to shove a pillow in front of my face when animals attack one another. And you dress
this. Anything you wouldn't know if it was well filmed then.
Well, this one I was peeking a bit. My dog was playing up. He was hearing the sounds and wondering what was going on. But you were the first people to film an elephant kill. And it was difficult to watch. I did watch this, but it was also very inspirational at the end. And Derek, I think you said you were struck with a realization when you saw that, that nothing is over until it's over. And Beverly, you said you wanted to scream and shout and tell it to run away. Talk to us a little bit about what it's like to... I know this is part of the law of nature, part of the food chain, but what is it actually like to sit there and film this?
Absolutely. It is emotionally draining, without a doubt. And especially when you also put into effect that we had tried to film that over a 10-year period. We'd heard it happening in the darkness, and each year through the window of opportunity was this intensely dry period just before the rains. And so already our emotions, you know, were just on the edge. But to witness something that you actually can affiliate to, especially an elephant. An elephant, you know, has breasts like a woman up front, and their eyes are so similar to eyes. And you feel that there's an immense intelligence in an elephant. And then all of a sudden to have eight lions trying to bring this elephant down is incredibly hard. I remember it was a very disturbing night for me. I had tears rolling down my cheeks, and I truly wanted to send some form of encouragement to that elephant not to give up. But you can't. You know, witnessing something so unique that the world had never seen, and this is nature playing out its game. It's not up to us to play God with nature. So we did. We carried on filming very professionally, although I must tell you, we were totally drained at the end.
Yeah, I remember Derek saying it was the emotions were being tossed around like passengers on a small vessel there. So Derek, you had said in the film, you mentioned that lions live in a violent world, but they're not malicious. Talk to us a little bit about that, if you would, because I've heard people say that they feel cats are malicious, but in the lion, in the big cat category, that's not true.
Well, it's definitely not. I don't think it's true in any cat category, in fact. And I think that in time that we've tried to distinguish and understand how man is different from the other animals, and it's certainly not in language. I mean, animals have their own language. It's not in emotion. We're now finding out that animals have emotion or altruism and all these other things. But the one thing that that we do claim exclusively as ours is a certain capacity to be malicious. So lions jumping on an elephant, definitely violent, and there's no doubt about that. I'm not quite sure what the category of cruelty is, but certainly they are killing these things to eat. When you see a cat playing with a mouse, it's practicing to hunt, and that also is not malicious. Mm. But we are the only ones that go out and bomb each other because we don't agree with a religious belief or even the color of your hair. So that's exclusively ours. It's nice to have something that's exclusively ours, I suppose.
even if it's not a good thing. There was a point that your lives were changed. You changed from being conservationists and filmmakers to becoming big cat advocates, and that happened when a leopard you were filming adopted for a while a baby baboon. I wonder if you'd talk to us about that.
You know, we had a period with this little leopard. She was 8 days old when we met her, and her mother basically led us to her den. And so we really got to know this little leopard intimately and spent 3 years filming this little leopard. Through that time, with them being solitary creatures and never having any backup but themselves, they had to, hunt for the cub and protect each other. It was remarkable that this little leopard started to accept us in her world. And through that period, we managed to capture scenes that in the 28 years that we were filming, we never ever saw before. And that this scene that you're talking about is one of those scenes that was totally unique. It's never been written up in science, and I think that's what is so wonderful about Derek and I filming out there. It's the complete unknown, and we're open to any form of discovery.
Right. So talk to us a little bit about what you're trying to do with the Big Cats Initiative. I know this is inspired by you and your work. National Geographic is supporting it. What is your hope that this will bring?
Well, the first thing is to have We're delighted that National Geographic are dedicating an entire week to this on Nat Geo Wild, because what it does is it focuses people's attention on this. I think that the real problem with all big cats and lions in particular is that we just think Africa's full of them. You know, they're so visual and they're so iconic that we think there can't be a problem with lions, surely. Somebody should be taking care of it. Well, the truth is that we're not. We're not doing a fantastic job of this. And so National Geographic giving us this week to talk about it is fantastic, because it's about awareness. But the truth is, we have to go further than that. We have to take action. And we started the Big Cats Initiative, where we are planning. We've got an action plan. This is an emergency action plan. If we don't do something about these big cats now, we will see extinctions by 2020, 10 years from now. And that's got to be all-encompassing. That's got to be buying land around the national parks, creating corridors. It's got to be compensation for cattle where lions kill cattle. We've got to step in. We've got to have a dialogue with the Maasai. There's got to be, you know, early warning for when lions are heading towards villages. We have to do basically an entire menu of things to try and stop the conflict between man and these big cats, otherwise they will be gone soon.
And this really is an emergency intervention. It's saying take action now, otherwise we will see the decline of these cats and we will move into extinction.
I can't imagine that that even people sitting in the middle of America or Europe or Australia even, who never will have a chance to go to Africa, I can't imagine that these people would be comfortable knowing that big cats disappeared from Africa.
And Africa has the highest poverty rate, and it really will deflate the country if we take big cats out of the system, because 80% of the tourism is really going to go on a safari, and of course they want to see the most iconic animals, being the cats.
Yeah, definitely. You said at the beginning that you saw your work as no more than a celebration, and now you've come kind of full circle on that and say maybe you were right at the beginning. It does have to be about celebration and respect. And I know people can find out more about your cause at causeanduproar.org. A final lesson that you'd like to leave with us from the big cats?
Well, I think that's really what it is they are these complex and really interesting gems out there in Africa, and we need all sorts of cooperation. We need participation. We need ideas. Everybody has to join together to try and figure out a way that these things do not go extinct in 10 years' time.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you both being with us today. Fantastic filming, fantastic work. I know billions of people have seen your films, and, you know, great, great work.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Vicky. It's been fun.
Thank you, Vicky. All the best.
And that was an interview that I recorded a couple of weeks ago with Derek Joubert and his wife, Beverly Joubert, filmmakers and National Geographic Explorers in Residence. You can find out more about them at nationalgeographic.com/bigcats or causeanduproar.org. Please stay with us. When we come back, we'll be joined by Freeman Hall, who's going to talk about retail hell. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
If you missed a show on Conversations Live, check out conversationslive.net for dozens of free podcasts. Topics range from health and healing to business and career growth, from personal development to creativity, adventure, and the challenges of the human spirit. See conversationslive.net for talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Conversationslive.net, making a difference one word at a time.
Do you love wildlife? Then make a real difference by helping PAWS care for sick and injured wild animals. Volunteers help feed and clean the animals until they are well enough to return to the wild. Sign up today and help save a wild life. No experience necessary. All training is provided. Visit PAWS.org or call 425-787-2500.
Hi, I'm Andrea Kay, America's leading career expert. I know it's going to be a great conversation when Vicki St. Clair asked me to offer my career advice on her show. Vicki asks thoughtful questions, she's thorough, she works hard to bring you great guests who walk their talk with information and solutions that can lift your career and better your life so that you'll live well, live strong. My advice? Tune into our conversations and all the interviews on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair for thought-provoking insight and tips on the things that really matter in your life. And visit AndreaKay.com, that's Andrea, K-A-Y.com, for information about my books and loads of free practical advice and inspiration for your career.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, talk radio to help you live well, live strong.
For the people, by the people. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. We're switching gears here. We're switching from surviving the animal kingdom to surviving the shopping kingdom. My guest in this segment is Freeman Hall. He says he began slaving in retail at the age of 20 at Macy's. His most notable experience was with specialty clothing store Nordstrom, where he spent 15 years as an award-winning handbag manager and salesperson. In 2007, he created the popular Retail Hell Underground blog and videos that generated a satirical sounded board for retail slaves worldwide. Freeman lives in Los Angeles and has a great sense of humor, I can tell you that. Freeman, welcome to the show.
Wow, thanks for having me. A nice introduction. Thank you so much.
And I should say, your book is called Retail Hell, How I Sold My Soul to the Store, Confessions of a Tortured Sales Associate. Yes. Freeman, I picked up this book and I randomly was skimming through it when your publicist sent it to me to decide, you know, is this a book I'm interested in? And every page I picked up, I laughed out loud.
Oh, thank you. That's what retail does to you.
Yeah, I was saying that because I too have done a little stint in retail. I think my two real retail stints happened when I moved, because it's a way to very quickly find work if you move to a new area. I could definitely relate to some of the issues you talk.
So, well, I always like to tell everybody, if David Sedaris and Kathy Griffin had a baby, a love child, it would be me. You get the storytelling and the potty mouth all rolled into one.
There you go.
Makes it more fun.
It does. It does. And of course, you're down in Hollywood. You are a screenwriter, too, and go into lots of daydreams in the book.
Yeah.
while you're selling in retail. So tell us a little bit about your book.
Well, it kind of follows how I moved to Los Angeles with the intent of the dream of becoming a screenwriter. And I, like you just said, you have to find a job. And I had been working already in retail going to college. And so I ended up at the big fancy department store, which is the name for the store in the book. And I ended up selling handbags, designer handbags behind the counter. And I think I was the first guy to do that in L.A. because when I, you know, back in the early 90s, there was very few men in that industry. So it was kind of an eye-opening experience because, I always called them purses, which a lot of people do. But in the handbag world, it's called a handbag, not a purse.
Yeah, it's I call them handbags because that's what we call them in England.
Exactly. You guys say it properly there.
But, I mean, you sold really high-end handbags because you were in, as you said, the big fancy store.
Yes.
So tell us one of the funny stories that you share in here, and then I know you've got some great tips for us. One of them I definitely want to get out here because it might save people some money while they're Christmas shopping.
Oh, yeah, and I have a really awesome tip to piggyback on top of that. The actual book opens with one of my crazy return stories of a woman who was returning a used Ferragamo handbag that she thought was perfectly fine, and I open it up and inside it's like dirty and filthy, and there is a tampon and a dirty bra inside.
This is like like a $2,000 handbag she's
it
trying
is.
To return.
And then she's staring at me and going, what? It's my sports bra. There's nothing wrong with it. And I'm like, use the bag. And you know what's really funny with some of these returners is they look at you back in the face and they're like, I never used it. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, gosh.
And then you're like, you see the hair and the glitter and the dirt at the bottom? And then they're like, I don't know what you're talking about. That was there when I bought it.
Right.
I found lots of crazy stuff inside a handbag when they were being returned.
Oh, I'm sure. But you actually did have to take that one back, didn't you?
Yes. And I lost my commission. And thus begins retail hell.
Yes, because I think a lot of people forget that many salespeople work on commission. Although, I have to say, sometimes, you know, I spent 30 years in customer service, so
I get mad when
people don't say hello and thank you and please.
On the blog that you mentioned, that's the whole rude customer, entitled customer. It's one of the biggest problems in the service industry right now. They're completely out of control. Whereas service people are, you know, for the most part, they have to be nice and have manners and treat the customers right, as they should. But the customers don't have any rules. So they just pretty much pick up the phone or walk in the store and leave all their manners behind. Mm. So it is becoming quite difficult out there.
Now, we hear a lot about Black Friday, but you say actually December 23rd is the real busiest day of the shopping year.
Absolutely. In my 20 years, I mean, Black Friday, it ends by like 9 a.m. And it's pretty much busy for, you know, the Walmarts and the Targets and the Best Buys. The other stores, it's all like a normal Saturday. But on December 23rd, that's when all the crowds really hit the mall and the stores because it's close to the last minute, but not quite. And so, you know, if you don't like crowds, stay out of the stores on that day. And actually, the next day, Christmas Eve, that is actually a better day to shop because it's actually man day. That's when all the men come in.
I noticed that. I noticed that when I moved up here because I didn't know anyone when I moved up here. And I went out Christmas Eve shopping and I was like, they're all men. So single ladies out there.
That's a great idea.
Go out shopping on Christmas Eve. They're all men, last-minute shoppers.
Yeah, go shopping for men on Christmas Eve.
Big markdowns, you say, happen the week before Christmas. So that's when we want to get out and save some money.
It's a really cool like little secret that I kind of learned just from working in the ready-to-wear areas for so long. And I just noticed it was a pattern every year around December 15th, 16th, the buyers in the clothing areas and accessories areas will take big markdowns on stuff because they know the crowds are coming and they want to get all that merchandise out the door before the end of the month. So it's kind of like this last-ditch effort thing. And so, you know, I don't know about as far as presents, but if you're looking for clothes for yourself, it's a really great time to go look for deals.
And a key thing to remember is that all stores price match. We just need the ad in hand to prove that somewhere else is offering it lower. And they'll get that
price. Absolutely. And there's a really cool thing. You know, we've got our smartphones now, and they are one of the best tools that you can have when you're out shopping. There's an app called Price Grabber. And what you do is you take a picture with the app of a barcode of clothing or electronics, whatever it is, and it will populate all the stores in your area that have that item and what they're selling it for.
Wow.
And that includes online. And then they also have a thing with it that they call Price Alert, and you can put in what price you want for the item, and then they'll let you know when the store marks it to that price.
Wow.
Checking.
And that's called Price Grabber and Price Alert.
It's Price Grabber, and then the Price Alert is with Price Grabber. It's part of their system.
Super.
It's great to have our phones now. They're just a great little tool.
Yes. And I did not know this until I was reading your notes. December 17th is free shipping day online.
Yes. That's coming up on Monday, I think. And it's... freeshipping.org. There's a couple of websites, and almost all the major retailers online are doing it. They're all kind of just following in on it. So really good day to save some money.
Okay, so December 16th. Well, I think that's Friday, December 17th.
Yeah.
So free shipping. Yeah, freeshipping.org, a whole list of online retailers. Gift cards. This is another one that I read that a lot of companies do not. A lot of companies make out like bandits because people don't actually ever cash them in. They think they've expired, and most of them do not ever expire.
That's true. Yeah, that's kind of a weird thing. You know, I think with some companies they're kind of changing that policy to so that customers will continue to buy them. But you know, I remember the days, you probably do too, when a gift certificate was kind of a bad gift to give somebody.
But not anymore. Not anymore.
I mean, I personally, especially for clothing, I would much rather have a gift card.
Right.
Then I don't have to return, you know, the ugly shirt that my family got me.
Right. Well, Freeman, we're at the end of our segment. You wrote a really funny book. This book itself would make a great gift. It's called Retail Hell.
Oh, thank you.
And I want to thank you for being with us. And very, very quickly tell us the website where people can find you.
RetailHellTheBook.com. And if you're a retail slave and you want to rant, RetailHellUnderground.com.
Super. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you. It was such a pleasure.
Freeman Hall, Retail Hell is the book. We'll be back next week. Until then, live well, live strong.